It was his first ever visit to the Pentagon. Kelly felt ill at ease and soon entered the proper office. "Yes?" a petty officer asked. "John Kelly. I have an appointment with Admiral Maxwell." He was invited to take a seat, then was soon led into Maxwell's office. "How are you feeling, John?" Maxwell asked. "Fine, sir. Thank you." Kelly's unease got worse when the door opened to admit two more men, one in civilian clothes and the other a rear admiral, another aviator Kelly saw, with the Medal of Honor, which was even more intimidating. Maxwell did the introductions. "I've heard a lot about you," Paldusky said, shaking the young man's hand. "Thank you, sir." Kelly didn't know what else to say. "Kaz and I go back a ways," Maxwell observed. "I got 15 enemy aircraft. Kaz got 18. All on film, too," Paldusky assured him. "I didn't get any," Greer said. This plain-clothed admiral took out a map, then the photographs, and Kelly got another look at Colonel Zacharias. "Tell me about the valley," Maxwell said. "A good place to stay away from." "First, tell me how you got Little Dutch back." "Every step of the way," Greer ordered. Kelly needed 15 minutes for that, and he was surprised by the looks the admirals traded. It was instantly clear to them that Kelly was a warrior, and they saw themselves in him. "That was some job," Greer said when Kelly finished. "So, this area is densely populated?"
"Some farms and stuff. I heard and saw some traffic on this road."
"How you planning to get in here?"
"There's nothing easy, John. We've looked at helicopters. Maybe an amphibious assault,"
Kelly shook his head. "Has to be choppers." He knew why the news was not welcome. This part of the country was dotted with anti-aircraft batteries. Getting a strike force in wasn't going to be easy. "Can I ask why you're keeping this so tight?" Kelly asked.
"You guessed it before," Maxwell replied.
"The Songtae job was compromised," Greer said. "We don't know how, but we found out later through one of our sources that they knew, at least suspected, something was coming. They expected it later, and we ended up hitting the right place after they evacuated the prisoners, but before they had set their ambush up. Good luck, bad luck. They didn't expect Operation Kingpin for another month."
"Dear God," Kelly breathed. "Somebody over here, deliberately, betrayed them."
"Welcome to the real world of intelligence operations, Chief," Greer said with a grim smile.
"But why?"
"If I ever meet the gentleman, I will be sure to ask." Greer stood, nodded to his friends, and led Kelly outside to his car. They got in and headed towards the George Washington Parkway.
"Dutch pulled your package," Greer said. "I got to read it. I'm impressed, son. You're a real leader."
"Look, sir, when you're out there and things happen, somebody has to get it done."
"Not everybody sees things that way," Greer said.
The highway sign didn't say anything about CIA. Kelly didn't tumble to it till he saw the oversized guardhouse.
"Did you ever interact with agency people while you were over there?"
Kelly nodded.
"What did you think of them?"
"Two or three of them were pretty good. The rest..." Greer laughed. He parked and led Kelly in the front door and got him a special visitor's pass. For his part, Kelly felt like a tourist in a foreign land. CIA headquarters wasn't like the real world, somehow. Greer led Kelly to his sixth-floor office. Only when they were behind the closed door did he speak.
"How's your schedule for the next week?"
"Flexible."
"I don't have anything tying me down," Kelly replied cautiously.
Greer nodded soberly. "Dutch told me about that." "I'm sorry, Chief, but my job right now concerns 20 good men who probably won't see their families again if we don't do something."
"Sir, I'm real confused."
"Well, we can do it hard or easy. The hard way is that Dutch makes a phone call and you get recalled to active duty," Greer said sternly. "The easy way is you come to work for me as a civilian consultant. We pay you a per diem that's a whole lot more than chief's pay." Then Greer outlined his plans.
Kelly would ship down to Eglin Air Force Base via New Orleans. Greer tossed an ID to him. It would, he explained, get him access to their records, which he wanted Kelly to look over to create a model for Boxwood Green.
"Are you really serious about this?" Kelly asked.
"Chief, Dutch Maxwell is willing to sacrifice his career for those men. So am I, if there's a way to get them out.
What about the peace talks?
Listen, Colonel Zacharias is officially dead, Greer explained. The other side said so, even published a photo of a body. Someone went to visit his wife. Then they gave her a week to vacate the official quarters. But this photo we have isn't good enough for a court of law. The people at the top don't want the peace talk sidetracked. And if the lives of 20 more men are necessary to end the goddamned war, then that's what it takes. Those men are being written off. It was almost too much for Kelly to believe. We're handling this as a black project. That means it doesn't exist. Are you on the team or not?
New Orleans. Kelly's eyes narrowed for a moment. Then he nodded. If you think I can help, sir, then I will.
Greer managed a smile. Your ID is in the name of John Clark. You will fly down tomorrow afternoon. I want to see you next Friday. Here's my card and private line. Get packed, son.
Aye, aye, sir.
It was an uneventful flight, and upon arrival, Kelly tossed his bags into the rental car and headed east. 4 hours later, he arrived at Eglin Air Force Base. An officer met him. Mr. Clark.
Yes, he handed over his ID folder.
The officer actually saluted him, which was a novel experience. The man, Captain Griffin, led him to his room at the bachelor officer's quarters and helped him unpack. Griffin then escorted him to the officer's club. Kelly bought the beers. We have all the documents you need ready for you, Griffin said between sips. 10 minutes later, Kelly was poring over the photographs and documents from the Kingpin mission that had gone awry. He began his studies in earnest. And so the days continued. The paperwork was surprisingly stimulating. He'd never before tried to figure things out in quite this way, and he was surprised to find he had a talent for it. Kelly made his notes, cramping fingers and wearing out numerous pencils. Whatever else it had been, Kingpin held extremely valuable lessons.
Captain, you've been very helpful, Kelly said.
Find what you wanted, Mr. Clark, Griffin asked.
Yes, Mr. Griffin, he said, and handed over his note, sealed in an envelope. Courier the package to this address.
Yes, sir. You're due some time off.
I think I'll depressurize in New Orleans before I fly back. There, he thought, he would begin his own private mission.
He loved New Orleans, a city in the European tradition, rich in history. Pierre Lamarck walked the streets with a sense of belonging, wearing a white linen suit complete with vest and red silk tie. He eschewed the sartorial excesses that some other pimps loved, preferring his own image as a respectable businessman. He opened his car door for his newest acquisition, 15 years old and recently broken in, an enticing member of his 8-girl stable. He looked forward to a warm and lucrative night.